Hello and welcome in to the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. My name is Stuart Lawler. This is episode number 12. Delighted to be back with you once again. What a busy month we've had. We were running the first ever Sight and Sound Summer School in August from the 12th to the 16th. Amazing response to that online event. Thank you to everybody who was able to join in person. If you weren't able to join in person, all the Summer School sessions are available on this podcast page on Audio Boom. You can download or listen or stream the audio from Audio Boom if you wish. Sharon Lyons talked us through a whole series of shortcuts for Windows and Office. Ash Cross took us on a tour of the Ruby range of magnifiers from Vespero. Ruth Gallagher Carr talked to us all about Zoom Text magnification software. I did a session on Braille displays from Vespero, and we finished it off with a surgery style session on the 16th of August with some of our colleagues from Sight and Sound, including Matt and Ash from our tech support department. It was absolutely great to just have so many people joining us, and a lot of international participation as well. So thank you to everybody who got in touch. Feedback and comments about this podcast are always welcome. Had one minor technical difficulty just before we started recording today with my regular rig here. So recording with a different device. If you notice different acoustics, that's why. I hope it won't detract from your enjoyment of the podcast. As I say, you can get in touch with us by sending an email to podcast@sightandsound.co.uk or contact us in Northampton on 01604 798 070, or if you're listening in Dublin or in Ireland and you want to call us in Dublin, 01690 9720. Now, coming up on this episode, we will be speaking to Anna Shales McNamee. She's written a play entitled My Dad's Blind, and it's doing a nationwide tour here in Ireland in the month of September. Really interesting interview coming up in a little while. And Holly Took is the curator of a blog called Life of a Blind Girl, one of my favourite blogs at the moment. I'm reading Holly pretty much every second day. She'll be joining us in a little while to talk all about her blog and tell us a little bit about herself. But first, on the 30th and 31st of August, James Everson and Sharon Lyons and myself were delighted to be collaborating with our friends and colleagues at Angel Eyes NI at their assistive technology event held in Maharafelt in County Derry in Northern Ireland. And at the end of that event, I had a chance to catch up with Karen Wilson from Angel Eyes and for a bit of a chat. So I got out my microphone and started off by asking Karen to tell us a little bit about what is or who are Angel Eyes.
So Angel Eyes is a charity that was started by the CEO, Sarah McCracken, who's a parent of twins with a vision impairment. It was started primarily as a way of getting support for other parents out there whose children had a vision impairment, and it then evolved into a charity and has now been going for over 12 years.
So the type of supports that you're doing with parents, what type of things are you doing?
So we have family support, and that is through my colleague Paula Robson, who is on the Family Focus Project, supporting children who are aged 0 to 5. We also have Kerry in the office, who works with the parents, and she has developed a series of wellness programme for parents as well. It's really about peer support and informing parents so that they can make the right choices for the better outcome for their children.
We've just been, I suppose, running a two-day exhibition, really interesting, and a lot of the sort of challenges or queries we've had are obviously about technology, but what other things are parents saying to you? Where are the big challenges and what are the big obstacles for kids?
Well, the project that I work on is, my role is education advocate, so it's really about upskilling parents on how to navigate our education system and how to get the support that their children require in schools to fulfil their potential and excel in their educational journey. So we're doing that through a series of workshops that I run throughout the year, but also for just giving advice directly to parents, like through phone calls and emails, supporting them at school meetings or at meetings with the education authority.
What are parents saying about the support? Because I imagine this must be a huge addition for them. In particular, when you say things like supporting at school meetings or meeting education authorities, where there might be maybe a lot of bureaucracy. So is that are you getting feedback that people feel this is a very useful service?
Absolutely. I think parents are feeling much more empowered as a result of and more confident just having some support going into meetings, because it can be a very daunting situation, especially when you feel that you're walking into the principal's office.
I assume the end goal, Karen, in a lot of this is to ensure that kids are supported and parents are supported, that that journey through education is made as seamless as possible, and long term, I suppose, you're preparing people for their ongoing journey towards a career.
Absolutely. We're always looking at the long game. So it's really getting the right support in for early intervention as soon as possible to ensure that, as I say, the educational journey from zero all the way through up into GCSE, A-level, university, and then, as you say, employability. So it's really having the children as well acquire the skills that they need, such as technology as well.
Okay, and we've been doing lots of that in the last day or so. I've been following you guys on Facebook. I know you're very active on social media. How can people, I suppose, find out more about you, maybe get in touch if they're listening and they want to know more, and stay in touch to know what you're doing?
Yep, they can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We also have a website, or they can give the office a call if they feel more comfortable doing that. It is 02890 941632, or email me directly on karen.wilson@angelizeni.org.
I have to say, from past experience, super fast responses to those emails as well. So well done, Karen.
Thank you.
Thank you for chatting to us today, but also thank you for hosting us for the last 2 days. We've had a really great event here, thanks to you guys. So we've enjoyed it, and we look forward to continuing to working with you. For the moment, thanks a million, Karen.
Thank you, Stuart.
Well, it's an exciting and busy month in September for a play called My Dad's Blind. They're doing a nationwide tour around Ireland, and Anna Shales McNamee is the woman behind it, the author of the play, and joins us on the phone. Anna, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you for having me on.
Great to have you. I actually heard about this play, I think, about a year and a half ago, because it was it launched, I think, then. Tell us a little bit about the background.
So the play is a true story, and it's based on my experience of growing up with a blind parent. The whole intention behind the play was to kind of humanise disability a bit, because a lot of the time growing up, people would have told me my dad was amazing, which I really didn't understand, because he's quite a boring man. He works a 9-to-5 and, you know, watches Coronation Street and, you know, listens to The Archers. I don't know if you know that show on BBC Radio 4, but it's the most boring radio show there is. And so he wasn't exactly like climbing up Everest blind, so I thought it would be fun to kind of do a comedy, and a dark comedy, and kind of say all the things you're not supposed to say. And so the show is very dark, with its humour, and it's very irreverent, and it's not PC at all, and the blindness is kind of there as a catalyst to take you into a father-daughter relationship. And there's these recordings that I did with my dad originally. I did them on the sly originally, because I knew he would try and paint himself as a superhero if I told him I was writing a show about him. So all of these recordings are throughout the show, so you get to hear his actual voice and be reminded that, you know, all of this is based on real life.
What was the experience like? Because, I mean, and I'm sure when we see the show, there'll be lots of this kind of stuff. But when I was reading the press release about the play, it made me think about an experience a couple of years ago where I was with my goddaughter, who was about 7 or 8 at the time, and we were at a fun fair. And my fiance, who has her guide dog, was with us, and I was walking with my goddaughter, so she's fully sighted, and I guess she was guiding me, although I was also using my white cane. And about 3 or 4 times, people stopped us and said to her, "You're great." And I realised about halfway round that they were telling her she was great because she was guiding me. Have you had those experiences with your dad?
Yeah, I did. I know exactly that feeling. I don't know what age your goddaughter is, but I remember being seven, and everyone would, so I would guide my dad to my school, and everyone would kind of stare at us, and I was quite a shy child, so that really embarrassed me. And I actually remember telling my dad that I didn't want to guide him anymore because I was so embarrassed. It was just constant staring. And when you're a child, you don't fully understand what's going on. And then you kind of cop that, oh, right, it's because dad's blind. Right, I better stop doing that. You don't really think about that. That might hurt his feelings. But he was really good about it. And he said it was fine. And then I just thought about it for a few months. And I came around and said, it's all right, I'll guide you now. But I know my sister thought that all dads were blind up until she was about four or five. And then she got in a car with her friend's dad, and he started driving, and she started crying because she thought he was going to crash the car.
I've actually heard that about other people as well, you know, people saying that they thought their parents were blind, that all parents were blind. What about, and I suppose you've kind of touched on at the beginning, this idea that most of the media's portrayal of blind people, they're superheroes, as you said, they're climbing Everest, they're doing all these mad, crazy things that, you know, most of us who are blind, actually we don't do. So here's a very normal, you know, I guess it is a normal family, and a funny kind of a look at the whole thing. Is that what you really wanted to portray? That bottom line, blindness is pretty boring, actually.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of, you know, I just wanted to show that everybody is, you know, everybody's brilliant and everybody's horrible at the same time. It doesn't matter whether you're blind or sighted. And that, like, obviously we talk about the blindness, but really you see two very messed up people on the stage who are just trying to figure out how to love each other and how to get along, you know, because as we all know, parent-child relationships can be very tricky sometimes, and they can be really annoying, and they can be brilliant as well. And it's just to kind of show that, I think a lot of the time people just see the disability rather than seeing the person. So I thought the best way to do this would be to show the kind of, what I grew up with, which is a very, you know, three-dimensional person, not just, you know, a blind superhero who's, like, doing a great job at bringing me up, because my dad did do a great job bringing me up, but he also did a terrible job, you know, because he's human.
So tell us, what does your dad think of the play?
So he's obviously very proud of the play, and he likes to call it his play, and that my lawyers will be on to him about his copyright fees that he's owed. But initially he got such a shock because I think it's very overwhelming to see a lot of your own stories on the stage and to sit in an audience with people you don't know reacting to it. So he was really shocked, and he had so many questions from me and wanted to know why I included some stories and didn't include others. But overall he's very proud, I think.
He gave it the seal of approval anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So listen, you've got a busy month of September ahead. As we publish this podcast, it'll be around the 6th, 7th of September. And the play, and it's going all over Ireland, is not just your run-of-the-mill play, as we've heard, but you have an additional bonus of audio description for visually impaired audience.
Yes, we do. I think we're the first touring show to have audio description on every single show. So Fighting Blindness is sponsoring that, which we're really, really happy about. And what shocks me is that more shows don't use audio description, because when we were doing the research with NCBI, who have been partnering with us on the show, there's over 55,000 visually impaired or blind people in Ireland. And it's hard enough to get people into the theatre. So I was like, why are people not putting audio description on all the shows? There's like a whole market there that you can take advantage of. So we have it on every single show, and I know that Kevin Kelly, who is the advocacy officer at NCBI, had said to me that he missed a few things when we did it in the Fringe the last time, just as a visually impaired audience member, and that would be wise to put audio description on every show. And I thought, why not, since the subject is so about all of that. I should put it on. So it's there, yeah. And we've got program notes as well, which can be helpful to just kind of set things up for you visually.
Fantastic. I've no doubt there's going to be people, because I actually haven't seen it yet, so I hope to get to see it before the end of September. Where can people find out info about kind of where it is, and is there a website where people can kind of plan their viewing of the play?
Yeah, so you can find us on Facebook, My Dad's Blind, or Twitter, My Dad's Blind, or Instagram, My Dad's Blind. We'll be in the Civic this week, from the 3rd to the 7th in Tala, and then we'll be in Galway, Carlow, Mayo, Wexford, Cavan, Clare, Kilkenny, and Letterkenny. So you can get all of that info on social media. Even if you just put into Google, My Dad's Blind, the info is everywhere.
All right, fantastic. Anna, it's a really great... I'm just delighted to kind of hear... It's very refreshing that somebody is doing a play about something very ordinary, boring, run-of-the-mill blind person, and some funny bits. So well done for doing that. Really looking forward to seeing it, and thanks a million for giving us your time today, and very best of luck with it.
Thanks for having me on, Stuart. It was lovely talking to you.
To catch up with users of assistive technology, and every so often I stumble across things online that I really want to follow up on. One of them is a blog entitled Life of a Blind Girl, which I highly recommend everybody read, and its author, Holly Tuke, is with us today. Holly, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Great to chat about yourself and the blog. I've been reading it for the last couple of weeks. You're posting some great stuff up there.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself first. You're totally blind, is that correct?
Yeah, so I only have light perception.
Okay.
I'm registered as blind due to a condition called retinopathy of prematurity, or ROP for short, because it's quite long. I was born at 24 weeks, so that's what...
Blogging, and we'll talk about the blog a bit more in a sec, but blogging for you, because you seem to be doing a lot of it, was that something that you kind of wanted to do, to just put out there your own experiences and kind of share thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. I started reading blogs a few years ago, and then I kind of thought, I'd quite like to do something like that. So I started my blog, and I never really knew if anyone would even read it or where it would go, really. But I wanted to start a blog just to, like, share my experiences of living with a vision impairment, you know, to kind of help others, and also to maybe, like, tackle some of the common misconceptions and stigmas surrounding disability and blindness, because I think there's a lot of them, and sharing and reading real life experiences is really important.
And one of those, and I was reading it this morning, and I think it's one of the most recent articles you've published, is all about the cane. And, you know, is it more than just a white cane? And one of the articles you've written would say that it is, for you. Yeah. It's, you know, the fashion accessory, the colourful cane, and you list a whole load of things, which really got me thinking as a cane user as well.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, because I think for everyone, the cane is something different. So for some people, it might be just a mobility aid, but for a lot of us, it's something we use on a daily basis. So I think, like, when you delve deeper into that, it's actually more than just the mobility aid. Like, it's our independence in a way.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do? Because I know you work, and you mentioned you work in your blog.
Yeah, so I work as an assistive technology advisor at a university. So I train students how to use a range of assistive technology for various aspects of their studies, like note-taking, proofreading, planning, research, and things like that. And we work with disabled students and also non-disabled students as well, because a lot of the software is available on campus. So I work with a wide range of people, which is really good.
That experience of, I suppose, giving people that skill, that, and especially something around assistive technology, that training piece, is vitally important. Do you find that people are kind of coming to you willing to embrace the technology, or is there still a big fear out there about, because, you know, study and then to throw in assistive technology on top of, you know, a regular course is a lot to take in for people?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's often mixed. I mean, most people are willing to embrace technology, and once they kind of see what it can do for them and how it can have an impact on them and their studies, they're like, oh, this is amazing. But obviously I think a lot of it is the fear surrounding technology, and maybe if they haven't used it before, it can be quite scary and daunting. I think we've got to kind of teach them in a way and look them to be positive, because it can really change and help them as well. It also means that as trainers, we've got to have a positive outlook on it and encourage them to use the assistive technology and show them what it can do, rather than saying, oh, look, it's going to be difficult, so you might not use it. But we've got to say, you know, this is how it can help you. So although it might be scary, once you get to grips with using it, it can really make a difference.
And as a trainer, I think, and because I did this in a previous life, passing on that skill to someone, maybe something that you've used already or that you can see the huge benefits, and working with someone, and then suddenly when they see the benefit, when the light bulb moment happens, is incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. I feel like it's such a rewarding moment, and it makes everything worthwhile. It has such a huge impact on not only them, but you as well. And you think, you know what, these are my experiences, but I'm passing it on to someone else.
Yeah.
And I think that's really wonderful.
Okay, so Holly, we're here really, of course, as we said at the start, to talk about the blog and promote the blog. And there's loads of great stuff up there. I was reading this morning about your concert, Shawn Mendes' concert experience. And that whole thing of going to a concert, doing the whole VIP thing. I highly recommend people read the post, by the way, because you had to jump through a lot of hoops to get there.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't easy. I think there's a lot to be done in terms of ticketing companies and venues understanding various disabilities and, you know, making things equal and giving us equal access. And as well, like, just simply understanding that disabled people want these experiences and there's no reason why we shouldn't have them.
You've done a lot of this, you know, you've been out and about a lot. You're always blogging about things that you're doing. What do you think the awareness is like out there from members of the public? Is it getting better?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because I often think it's getting better, but then say I'll read something on Twitter or I'll have an encounter myself and I'll think, oh, maybe it's not. But yeah, I do think it is improving, and I think often it's an individual thing, because say if someone hasn't come across a blind or vision impaired person before and they offer to help, but then it's the wrong way, they might not know that's not how you do it. But yeah, I do think although we have negative encounters and there is a long way to go, I do think it's getting better.
Now, your blog has gotten quite a lot of traction. I mean, I'm trying to remember where I found it out about it. It could have been through RNIB, actually, because lots of people have been tweeting you and sort of recommending, and quite rightly so, that people should read you. How has that been, and what have people been saying to you?
It's incredible, to be honest, because I started my blog 4.5 years ago now, and I kind of started it in my bedroom, and, you know, I still blog in my bedroom. And it's kind of incredible when you get like a Twitter message or a Facebook message or an email saying, oh, I really like your blog and it's helped me. And when organisations, and you know, this podcast, like, I never thought that it would reach this point, to be completely honest. Like, I started blogging because it was a hobby and it's become like such a huge part of my life.
I noticed, and I was really, as a screen reader user as well, there's lots of, or at least there seems to be lots of pictures in the blog with very descriptive alt text on them. So people who are using access technology will certainly get a feel for all the exciting things you've been doing.
Yeah, I think accessibility is really important, and I try to make my images as descriptive as possible. I don't have any useful vision, so it's kind of always a team effort between me and either my mum or my dad. So, because I always get them to describe them and say, look, describe it in the best possible way. So obviously I can appreciate it, but more importantly, readers can appreciate it, because I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Just because we can't see it, we still want to have the experience. We still want to know those little elements.
So tell us, where can people find you? How can people get in touch with you? I know, I'm sure after reading this podcast, you're going to have more people tweeting and you know, publicising the blog. How can people do it?
Yeah, so you can find me at lifeofablindgirl.com. I'm on Facebook as Life of a Blind Girl, Instagram as Life of a Blind Girl, and Twitter, Life of a Blind Girl, but without the I in girl, because it doesn't let you have that many characters. But also, all my social media links are on my blog as well. So you can find them at the top of my blog homepage and on every post and page as well.
And you're, just from my experience of setting up this interview, you're super fast at getting back to people. So It's great.
That's nice.
Holly, it's a fantastic story, a blog well worth reading, something that we wanted to help promote. So I wish you all the very best of it. I'll certainly be staying in touch, and I hope our listeners will. For the moment, thanks a million for talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Holly. That was a really nice piece. Thoroughly enjoyed talking to Holly. Sitting in my office, got her online at the end of a busy day for Holly. So thank you for taking the interview, and do subscribe and read the Life of a Blind Girl blog. I thoroughly enjoy it, and I feel we're going to hear from Holly again on the podcast. It's certainly not the last time that we're going to stay in touch. That's just about it for this month. Thank you, as always, for listening. We'll be back again soon. Until then, from Stuart Lawler and everyone at Sight and Sound Technology, take care and goodbye.